ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. So, Mina, the NFL draft is in Vegas this week. How long are you going to be there?
Pablo, I'm going to be there for 4 days, which violates my rule when it comes to Las Vegas, which is never spend more than 3 days in Las Vegas. But we will be there for good reason. We'll be doing NFL Live and also an NFL Live primetime special on Wednesday, which you should check out.
Yeah, I love the idea. I will check it out. I love the idea that like a bachelorette party is going to break out on set, basically.
Oh my God. One bachelorette party? There's going to be millions of bachelorette parties behind us.
So the NFL draft was in Cleveland last year. Now it's at the opposite geographic location. What is the, set the scene for us here for people who are not familiar with how the NFL is going to do this thing.
Well, the biggest contrast, Pablo, besides all of the obvious contrasts between the two cities, is that it was very cold last year, and this year it's going to be very, very hot. That said, the players have the option of jumping into the water if it's too hot, because the stage is, I believe, above the Bellagio fountains. Boats are involved. These are all things that they actually wanted to do in 2020 because, the draft was supposed to be in Vegas that year, and then the pandemic began.
Wait, so you're going to have players just being like ferried to and from the podium like on an actual boat on this Bellagio water.
The disaster potential seems high.
Beyond the theatrics, Mita, like what does distinguish this specific draft? Because last year, you know, it was all about the 8 quarterbacks that got taken ultimately in the first 3 rounds of the draft. That's the most ever. This does not seem to be the story or anywhere close to it for this time around.
Yeah, so this draft has been labeled as, I would say, underwhelming maybe relative to some recent ones. But the excitement of it, what makes it so intriguing to me, is nobody knows what's going to happen. Like in recent years, a lot of the top 10 picks have been fairly chalky. Mock drafts for this one are all over the place. You're seeing edge rushers, wide receivers, offensive tackles all being mocked in different orders. And it's going to be extremely interesting to see how it plays out.
The 2022 NFL Draft begins on Thursday night with the Jacksonville Jaguars on the clock. But what happens from there is pretty much anybody's guess. So today, in an attempt to educate our guesses, we turn to our old friend, NFL analyst Mina Kimes, who has done an absurd amount of homework to prepare herself for Vegas. And she tells us everything we think you need to know. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, April 26th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Okay, so Mina, I do want to be clear here at the start that this episode is going to be one of those group projects where one of the people, in this case, clearly me, shows up to the meetings and needs to borrow a pen and paper, while their friend, who has everything organized in a binder with those color-coded tabs and footnotes, is just going to carry us. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, Pablo, I'll do my best, but don't blame me if we both end up getting B minuses.
Yeah, that happened to me in Dinosaurs and Their Relatives, an actual science class I took for credit in college. But I guess I want to start here at the very top, literally speaking, Mina. Who is going to be the number one pick in this year's draft, as you understand it?
So, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know. For a long time.
I'm smelling B minus, but continue.
I don't know. Hear me out. So for a really long time, you know, I guess after the college football season ended, it seemed inevitable that Aiden Hutchinson, who you guys just had a great episode about, edge rusher out of Michigan, was going to be the number one pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have a need there. He is, I would say, like the highest floor prospect of the edge rushers. Had a massive year in Michigan, really just a massive leap, frankly, to his final year, recording 14 sacks, which was a school record, and it displaying a lot of the qualities you'd want in a first round pick.
Petras in trouble. Petras goes down. Aiden Hutchinson, he'll roll up on you folks and let you smell his cologne. That is sack number 14.
He has an incredible array of pass rush moves, an incredible motor. He's fantastic in run defense. And at the combine, he crushed it as well, you know, especially his three cone, which is a good indicator for success at that position. However, in recent weeks, there's been a lot of smoke. This happens a lot. There's been even more smoke than usual. And there's rumors that Trayvon Walker, who's another edge rusher out of Georgia, could overtake him as the Jags pick.
So in terms of the edge rushers, I mean, it does seem like what I've heard is that the edge rushers are going to be going pretty quickly at the top of this draft.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if certainly in the first 10 picks, we see the top three all go. The second of whom in my, or I guess could be first, is Trayvon Walker, who, you know, if Aiden Hutchinson is the high floor prospect, he's the crazy high ceiling, but might not get that prospect.
What do they got on third and 14? No protection again. Sack off the edge. Trayvon Walker joining the party.
Very athletic, which he displayed at the combine, which is a big part of the reason why he's jumped up so much. And when you watch him on that Georgia defense, I mean, he looks like the tallest, strongest, fastest guy out there. That said, he has less than 10 career sacks, and there has never been an edge rusher taken not just first overall, but in the top three in the last 20 years since the NCAA started tracking stats.
Wait. So this is really a potential play because
I mean,
the explanation for that is simply what? Why didn't he have the production that you would expect?
There's a lot of theories about that and I think explanations, one of which is the Georgia defense, which we're going to talk about later, was basically an all-star team. So he wasn't asked to line up way outside and pin his ears back and get after the quarterback like Aiden Hutchinson and then Kayvon Thibodeau, who's the other top three edge rusher. You know, he lined up inside a lot. He played a lot of run defense. Sometimes he dropped into coverage, which he's fantastic at. So I think that's the, I suppose, case for taking him, the upside case. The downside case is, you know, again, it's unprecedented to have this little pass rush production. And, you know, even when he did line up outside, he didn't show the sort of moves that Hutchinson or Thibodeau have.
Okay, so Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon, Trayvon Walker, Aiden Hutchinson, does that round out the group? What else should I know about the edge guys?
Yeah, well, first I want to say Thibodeau might be my favorite.
Ducks bring some pressure, can't take a sack, and the ball is on the ground. Thibodeau came around the edge, and that's why they call him a game wrecker.
As you mentioned, out of Oregon, 6'5", 250 pounds, unreal explosion. That first step is just tremendous. He's bendier than the other guys.
What, for the casual NFL non-tape grinder, what does bendiness entail?
So you know how Von Miller, who's kind of the prototype for bendiness, he gets super low to the ground, almost like parallel to the ground as he's turning the corner to get at the quarterback. That's what I'm talking about. It's like that flexibility, Gumby-like quality that the elite edge rushers tend to have.
Yeah, like a yoga kind of energy to how he lines up.
Exactly. But I want to say, you know, I love the other two guys who might get taken in the top half or whereabouts. Jermaine Johnson out of FSU, who, by the way, was on the Georgia defense and then transferred. That's how crazy the Georgia defense is.
Wow.
And then George Karlaftis out of Purdue, who's just extremely powerful. And interestingly enough, was born and raised in Greece and adopted football after moving to the United States.
Okay, wait. So give me another position group, Mina, that's attracting to you a noticeable degree of hype beyond the guys who you might see line up at defensive end.
offensive tackle is a position where I think we will see the top three players likely go in the top 10. If you look at the top 10, there's just a lot of teams that need offensive tackles. Potentially Houston, although they might take another position. They're kind of a wild card. You could argue the Jags should. The Giants, absolutely. The Panthers, if they don't take a quarterback. And there's some very, very good offensive tackles in this class. There seems to be a big three. Evan Neal out of Alabama, who is 6'7" and 350 pounds and moves like a cat somehow. Ikem Ikwanu, although I want to say Ikem, he is probably the most badass name, and it means, quote, "my effort will not be in vain," which seems reason enough for me to draft him top five overall. But he's just incredible, incredible run blocker.
I like him just rebranding the idea of what it is to be a tryhard.
I mean,
like,
actually,
I'm owning the hell out of this.
I mean, it's amazing. And it's something that, you know, teams love in offensive linemen. And then the other one is Charles Cross out of Mississippi State. Ton of pass pro experience, but has been, I think, some question a little bit because he played in air raid offense under Mike Leach. And some of the recent prospects coming from those types of systems have had, you know, a bit of a challenge transitioning to the NFL.
So those are the guys who are enormous, visually unmissable, but generally in terms of the hierarchy of NFL positions, like relatively anonymous. So where are the quarterbacks, Mina? Because we've gone through the offensive tackles and the edge rushers, but how about the marquee, like, you know, guys?
I would say this position group has probably been the most maligned headed into this draft. You know, last year, I remember when teams were crawling over themselves to take quarterbacks, the narrative was, well, you don't want to take quarterback next year. The class is not that good. And then in this offseason, Pablo, we've seen so much quarterback movement. I think that was also a bit of a referendum on this group. People are already looking to next year and saying, that's the good class. It seems like right now the consensus top two, and I'm seeing them in various, just different orders every time, are Malik Willis out of Liberty and Kenny Pickett out of Pitt, who are very, very different prospects, but both very interesting in their own ways.
Yeah, so what makes Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett stand out to you amid what feels like alleged mediocrity?
Oh, I think we're going to go again, high floor versus high ceiling. This is a common trend in draft speak, but it's important because Malik Willis is the highest ceiling quarterback in this class. I feel comfortable saying that.
Willis pulls it out, takes another shot downfield. That was a dive! Right in stride, touchdown Flames! He could not have run it down there and placed it in a better spot.
He had a 13.1% sack rate, which is wild. You know, his pocket presence isn't great. He's constantly on the run. But he also makes the most plays out of any quarterback in this class, any player, arguably, that make you say, holy, I forgot if we can cuss on this podcast.
We can cuss on this podcast.
Okay, well, insert cuss word.
They're bringing pressure. Linebackers coming. Willis trying to escape. Running for his life. Able to turn the corner. Looking for a block. Cuts it up. Stays on his feet. Are you kidding? It's a foot race.
You know, I think part of the reason his draft stock has climbed is the success of Josh Allen, who was also, you know, questioned by many people, including me, based on his college production. Had some similar issues. And then developed into one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I'm not saying Malik Willis is Josh Allen, but he has like those tools in terms of the arm strength and the rushing ability. You just kind of start dreaming of the upside when you watch him play.
Right, where like before like Josh Allen, really, we all assumed that like that pocket presence, the accuracy, we should not count on that being developable. But now that is sort of opening the ceiling for Malik Willis in a way that it wouldn't have been open before.
Yeah, Josh Allen is going to make a lot of teams make very bad decisions. I'll just say that. But, you know, some of those decisions might work out.
And so Kenny Pickett, then, where does he stand in contrast to that particular stew of possibilities?
So I think he's perceived as having the higher floor, although I actually don't believe he's the highest floor quarterback in this class. But in his final year at Pitt, he took a massive leap after really not doing much, you know, throughout his college career, had some injuries as well. But this last year, 42 touchdowns. By the way, before that, 13, I think, is where he peaked, and just 7 interceptions. made some really incredible plays on the move. He's really, really good at keeping his eyes downfield and looking to throw when he's flushed out of the pocket. He's very mobile. You might remember the 58-yard touchdown run where he faked the slide. Cited a lot of controversy. Yes.
There's Pickett, a very good runner. Don't sleep on those legs. Oh, he faked the slide. Sauce time. Pickett, did that work? Touchdown, Pitt.
Yet a rule changed and named after him because of the fake slide.
Informally, yes. So there's a lot to like. I think there's a few things to question. The one-year leap holds onto the ball really long time. And then, of course, the infamous tiny hands.
Yeah, where are we, Mina? What is the state of the union when it comes to tiny hands? How do smart people understand them now?
So he matched Michael Vick's hands at the combine, 8.5. But then at his pro day, he boosted it to 8 5/8 through some, I imagine, some exhaustive stretching. But
he's a grower, tiny. Not a shower. Yeah, yeah.
You said it, not me.
Okay, hold on. So in terms of the other quarterbacks, your guys whose draft stock are also potentially growers, who else are you looking at?
Well, one riser is the term we use, not grower, is Desmond Ridder out of Cincinnati. He was another guy who really bloomed at the end of his college career. Of course, you know, famously leading the Bearcats to a 13-1 record and an appearance in the college football playoff, which is really exciting. And I think he's rising for a couple of reasons. One, he had a really nice performance at the combine, ran the fastest 40 of the top quarterbacks. And the other thing is, you know, when you watch his tape, he's just really polished.
And Ridder in a rhythm, going to take a shot towards the end zone, under throw, but caught for the touchdown. Beat Kyle Hamilton in coverage, and that's a rarity.
He's arguably the best processor in the group. He makes smart decisions. He gets the ball out quickly. I think there's questions about his ceiling, but the floor, as I said, is high. And then the other two, just to kind of finish the group, are Sam Howell out of UNC, who was a quarterback who I think a year ago, when he was playing with much more talent, looked like he would probably be one of the top picks. Last year, played behind really bad offensive line, made it hard to evaluate. He ran a lot more, and you know he's a beautiful deep ball thrower, but I think there's some questions there about his pro readiness. And then there are also questions about the pro readiness of Matt Corral out of Ole Miss, who, you know, had a monster year in 2021.
Corral launches it downfield. He's got Sanders. Another touchdown for Ole Miss. 60.
But that's a very RPO-centric college offense, which kind of raises questions about what he'll do at the next level. And then I think the other thing that some teams are concerned about is his size. You know, he's 6'1", 205 pounds, which is fairly slender. He's a really tough scrambler, but that could cause some problems in the NFL. And, you know, he has been injured at times, most notably in his bowl game. So I think that's another area of concern.
All right, Mina, after the break, I want to ask you how much the most dominant unit in all of college football in 2021 is just going to dominate the first round of this NFL draft.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Mina, I've been trying to, like, dip my toe into, let's just call it what it is, into your just, like, crew of draft nerds. I've been trying to like figure out what you guys are obsessed with this year. And the Georgia defense keeps on coming up. And you've done it already on this podcast. So explain for all of us what is going on with this defense.
What's going on is you have at least five guys from this year's group who will probably go in the first round. I mean, it's just absolute superstars at so many positions. I already talked about Trayvon Walker, who I expect to be the first taken of the group. But my personal favorite is Jordan Davis, who you may remember from putting on, comfortably I can say, if not the best, one of the best combine performances of all time.
Here he goes.
Yeah, that's a big man moving.
He is.
That is a big man moving. Holy
that
moly.
That deserves a nice round of applause from the fans here.
He's a defensive tackle, probably nose tackle in the NFL, 6'6" and 340 pounds, and he ran a 4.78 40-yard dash. Pablo, to put that in context, Patrick Mahomes ran a 4.8. Dak Prescott ran a 4.79. That time is better than the average for the tight ends in this group. He also did a 10-foot, 3-inch broad jump, which is the longest by a 300-pounder since 2003. It's just outrageous.
No, a thick six king. I mean, the dude who, helped destroy Alabama in that national title game. Yes.
Yeah, he's also, he did score a touchdown. They did use him on offense once.
Davis, this time he's in for the touchdown. There's not much Jordan Davis hasn't done in his career at Georgia. Why not get the big man in the end zone?
He looks like a sub-zero refrigerator on wheels. He is just outstanding. I think the only question with him is like he didn't play a ton of snaps in large part because the Georgia defense was so talented. And also because next to him, you got Devontae Wyatt, who's another really, really good defensive tackle, maybe a little bit more advanced as a pass rusher. And Davis's performance was so impressive that it was kind of overlooked that Wyatt, who is admittedly only 315 pounds, ran a 4.77 40. Just jeez, monsters all over. So then you got behind them, N'Kobe Dean, who I was about to say is my favorite, but I already called Jordan Davis my favorite. But
the
truth is they're all my favorites. So N'Kobe Dean won the Butkus Award, which goes to the best linebacker in college football.
Third and seven again. Uiagalelei sacked again. N'Kobe Dean's been a nightmare tonight.
Just incredibly smart, instinctive, fast. Some questions about his size. He's only 5'11", about 234 pounds, but I think he'll be just fine in the league. And then the last one, just want to give credit to the final five in the boy band.
Yeah, you can't leave out your kids. I mean, this is what this is becoming now. How do you possibly choose which of these children is your favorite?
I can't choose. Is Lewisine safety, just hits like a freight train.
Backpedaling, Young gets it to Bolden, but he's not going to get there. Lewisine came flying in, dropped him for a loss.
Probably the second best safety in this draft. We'll talk about the first later. Yeah, I just love all of them. And here's the craziest part, Pablo. Jalen Carter, who's a defensive lineman, might be the best of them all, and he's not even draft eligible.
So as much as you love this one university's defense, who else among the defensive players in this year's draft do you find, in the words of Chris Matthews, do you find a thrill going up your leg in response to?
Well, I've already professed my adoration for Kyle Hamilton, who is the best safety. And I'll say this, if you want to arrive at a similar level of affection, just Google Kyle Hamilton FSU.
Downfield, and Hamilton again coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
How about the All-American? He's on the far hash. He gets all the way to the opposite sideline. If you're going to take a chance, don't take it in the direction of number 14 in the white jersey. That young man can play some football.
And you'll see a safety who is remarkably versatile, who can line up all over, deep, in the slot, in the box, blitzes. And when he moves, he looks like a pterodactyl. He's 6'4", 219 pounds, and just incredibly long.
Notably, one of the relatives in my Dinosaurs and Their Relatives class
That's
is
right.
pterodactyl,
That's right.
not an actual dinosaur. Yeah. the Kyle Hamilton thing for a second here. I thought you were going to say all you need to do is Google Kyle Hamilton plus Korea.
Listen, I'm not trying to be biased here. Sam Howell, by the way, also part Korean.
I mean, it's a hell of a year for the Korean American football prospect. But wait, so with the Kyle Hamilton thing also, I mean, I know this is also a macro trend that you've been kind of monitoring and talking about, right? Like the evolution of the safety in the NFL, given the way the game has changed, has also in turn changed the way that a Kyle Hamilton is getting valued.
Yeah, so something you're seeing in the NFL amongst defenses is more of the split safety, two high looks, which you heard about ad nauseum. As a result, you really need your safeties to be versatile. It's no longer just, okay, we got my strong safety in the box and the free safety, you know, playing center fielder like, Earl Thomas. You need them both to play basically every position and also be capable of disguising their intentions. So having a player like Hamilton, who, you know, I think he's shown that he can cover tight ends really well and also do all of the other things I just described, is immensely useful in today's NFL.
Yeah, and so given that need for defensive backs in that particular way, who else are you looking at and are excited by when you watch their tape?
So the top two corners, by most people's estimation, are a pair of velociraptors. I'm going to run out of dinosaurs soon. I'm just going to get going with this.
I got more. Don't worry.
Ahmad Sauce Gardner, very good name as well. Ooh. And Derek Stingley Jr., who goes by Sting. So you got Sauce and Sting, which sounds like a wrestling duo, but they do not play together. Gardner was also in Cincinnati. Stingley Jr. comes from LSU. And they're just both incredible athletes, incredibly good and sticky in man coverage. Sauce is especially good.
Sticky, I would imagine.
Yes. Especially good in press man. He's super aggressive, and then he has the speed to recover if he gets beat. Famously has never allowed a touchdown in his college career. And then in the college football semis when, you know, Cincinnati got beat down by Alabama, he only allowed 14 yards. So he's amazing. Stingley is a more interesting case because his freshman year, he looked like not just the best cornerback in future drafts, but maybe the best player out of this world. Production, ball skills, athleticism, agility. He tracks the ball in high points like a wide receiver. But after that year, he had some injuries, ended up not playing a lot. You know, there's the COVID year. And then this most recent season, he had a Liz Frank injury. So there's still some questions about that.
So in terms of the guys that the Sauce and Stings of the world are designed to help stop, I mean, the actual receivers here, Mina, I mean, we have made it this far without talking about any of them. And this is the position I feel like has a particular intrigue in the NFL this year, at least this offseason. And I've heard that this class gets described again by, you know, your fellow nerds as deep. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do. I think this cuts to kind of what we discussed at the beginning, which is part of the reason I love this draft so much is that all of the players could go in any order, which isn't fun. And I think that's definitely true of this wide receiver group. It's really like vibes based. Rather than there being a consensus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's kind of more like, well, what sort of flavor do you want?
Finally, I've been waiting for vibes to join motor and wingspan and all of the other characteristics.
I'm working on getting it into, you know, the vernacular and maybe bumping out some of the weirder words that are in draft speak. Garrett Wilson seems like number one, and for good reason. He is, when you watch him, the two words you just write over and over are circus catch.
They're going to throw one first down field shot. It's Wilson running free and we'll catch him. A lightning strike, Buckeyes.
His body control is insane. His ability to high point the ball. I mean, he really looks like a ballerina. That's my comp for him. What do you call a male ballerina? Ballet dancer? Ballet man?
Ballerino?
That feels like something that Sauce would cover.
I'm looking it up on Wikipedia. A regular male dancer in Italy is called a ballerino. So, you know,
oh, really?
What? Just roll with it.
Well, he's a ballerino and he's incredible. And I think like amazing that he played alongside another incredible wide receiver, Chris Olave, who's also like definitely going to go first round and who I think is pretty comparable, frankly, to Wilson. I think he's maybe the best route runner in the group. Just super, super polished. super talented, you know, and was really good over his entire college career. So that matters as well. But it does seem like Drake London out of USC is probably going to go ahead of him. 6'5", contested catch king, which is different from circus catches.
And London catches with one hand. Touchdown, USC. And that drive, all Drake London.
Just uses his size in fantastic ways and speed, and is a decent route runner. He played for the USC basketball team, which is a fact you're probably going to hear mentioned every game for the rest of his career on NFL broadcasts. But he's really, really good.
The Antonio Gates wing of the cliche Hall of Fame.
Yes, Jimmy Graham says hello. I'm trying to think of a fun fact for Treylon Burks out of Arkansas, and the one that comes to mind is that he famously hunts wild boar with his hands. And I think a knife. Definitely not. He said no guns. Absolutely not. So he's often compared to Deebo Samuel, just super strong, super diverse. You can line up the slot. You can just be running back all over, incredible acceleration. And then I'll just wrap with the guy who's actually my favorite wide receiver of the group. And that's Jameson Williams out of Alabama, who averaged 20 yards per catch. Just a magical deep threat. Really good at tempoing his speed. Unfortunately, he did tear his ACL in the national championship, which is, I think, the one thing that might send his draft position a little bit lower.
Wait, so as I'm now like dreaming on these sort of like, I'll throw in the Dino Nikus style receivers, these guys who can, literally kill their prey. I'm wondering, in the way that Josh Allen has kind of changed the calculus on quarterbacks, is there any risk that like a Deebo Samuel, Mina, is kind of doing something parallel? Like, I mean, again, Deebo Samuel currently rebelling against the job that I'm describing here.
Yeah.
But describe where we are with Deebo Samuel in terms of that particular, what do they call it again? Wide back?
Yeah, I even when I said Deebo Samuel talking about Treylon Burks, I like felt a little nervous and regretted it immediately. Because it is similar. It's a great point. Like, I think teams look at him and think, well, I want one of those. And then they look at the draft and Burks is the player who resembles him the most. But, you know, it is, I would say that's the best case scenario for him.
I will say, now that we're close to the end here, you have not mentioned a running back. And I feel like this is, if I have to be very candid with you, it feels like yet more throw the damn ball nerd propaganda. Mina, so how do you defend yourself against that allegation?
Well, I'll say this. I have not seen a single mock that has a running back going in the first. I think that's a mixture of a number of things. Some of it is the nerd propaganda slowly winning. teams realizing that they can find, you know, running back value in later rounds and not using their most valuable picks on a position that's relatively fungible. The players, you know, there's some really good backs, Breece Hall out of Iowa State, Kenneth Walker out of Michigan State, but I don't think they're viewed the same way, say, Najee Harris was last year. And then it just comes down to team needs. There just aren't that many teams that need running backs. So I think it's just kind of a mixture of all those things.
Well, then speaking of teams that are maybe not so progressive in terms of how they have used their quarterbacks and running backs, where are you with your Seattle Seahawks, Mina? What would you like them to do at the very end here?
Free me of my misery. Just kidding. The Seahawks are actually one of the most interesting teams in this draft because nobody really knows what they're going to do, and there's a wide range of possibilities. I think it starts with quarterback. You know, are they comfortable rolling with what they have? Drew Lock, Geno Smith, and trying to draft someone in next year's class, which, you know, is, as I discussed, kind of the superior class. Or do they want to take a quarterback? And then it becomes, do you love someone so much that you take them at 9, like a Malik Willis? Or do you try to wait later and grab, you know, Howell or Desmond Ridder? My preference, I think, would be to take a blue chip star, whether it's an edge rusher, cornerback, or offensive tackle at 9, and then maybe try to take a quarterback later if the board shakes out this way. But the ZX tend to not do what I want to do, so I'm just going to sit back and see what happens.
Yeah, I love the idea, though, of your blue-chip prospect coming over on that ferry across the Bellagio, the fountains exploding in the background, and then, you know, obviously, because it's the Seahawks, like, somehow it tips over, and there is your metaphor, your rescue boat turned into something to be rescued.
Well, you can watch our live draft show and see me tip over in real time, if that happens.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah. Mina, hydrate would be my only suggestion for the next 4 days of your life.
I'll do my best. Thanks, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.